This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Novavax Vaccines. Essential protection for essential bonds.
Hi, welcome to the Dr. Courtney Show. I'm Dr. Courtney Campbell.
Thanks so much for coming back and joining this podcast. Everybody who's tuned in before, welcome back. Everybody who's tuning in for the very first time. This is a podcast just dedicated to amazing people doing incredible things on behalf of pets everywhere. This could be scientists, veterinarians, pet parents, pet lovers, people in the boarding or grooming industry, everybody who is helping out pets in a big way. This is a great forum to just celebrate them and talk about some awesome information. I tend to forget or neglect to let people know where they can reach out to me. And so you certainly could always reach out to me at Dr. Courtney DBM on Instagram or Twitter. And please feel free with any questions. We are excited today about this podcast because today we're talking about something I am extremely passionate about, and I've been affected by, not personally my health, but in my entire professional career, this particular condition we're going to talk about today has been on the forefront. And so I am insanely excited. I am pumped, amped, and just charged up today because we are going to be joined by an incredible guest who's going to be talking to us about this condition. Now, I'm teasing it a little bit because for those of you who've joined the podcast before, some of you know where I'm from. And I'm from an amazing state. And, you know, this is just, it's been a proven fact. There's several reports to indicate that Connecticut is just the best state in the union. But no, seriously, I am from Connecticut. And what's unique about Connecticut, besides the fact that there's a lack of fun over there, but what's unique about Connecticut is that it is the birthplace of Lyme disease. And for those of you who have tuned in and have heard this podcast before, you know I love to set the scene. And the scene is basically me growing up as a young kid, playing in the woods with my brother and my sister. And at the end of the play day at dusk, we got to run in the house. My mom's calling us from the yard, calling us from the woods. And what's the first thing we do before coming in the house? We inspect our bodies for ticks. We're looking for ticks because we know that they can be dangerous. Well, you fast forward 25 years after vet school, I come back to my home state, not my hometown, but my home state to practice as a veterinarian. And lo and behold, 6 out of every 10 dogs that I'm seeing, 6 out of every 10 are testing positive for Lyme disease. Now, this doesn't mean that they're sick for it. And we're going to talk about that this podcast. But I was faced with a true decision, which is I need to wrap my head around this particular condition because this is something I'm seeing a lot. And how can I do a better job at taking care of the pets in my community with Lyme disease? So listen, if there's somebody that you want to talk to about Lyme disease, if there's somebody you want to talk to about infectious disease in general, you want to talk to Dr. Evison. She's an internist with a focus on infectious disease. She's fantastic, and I'm just so pleased to announce that she's joining us today on this podcast. And we'll be right back, right after these messages.
My name is Tracy Boss, and I'm a volunteer for Tracy's Dogs in San Antonio, Texas. Tracy's Dogs is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that rescues dogs and kill shelters with pending euthanasia dates. We give them a safe place to stay, all the medical attention they need, good food and love, while we are searching in the background all over the country for their forever homes. Once a month, we transport the dogs that have been adopted to carefully screened families in cities all over the United States. If you'd like to learn more and help this wonderful mission, please visit our website at www.tracysdogs.com. We are currently gearing up our efforts to move our rescue from the currently rented property that we have to our own 22-acre parcel in beautiful Medina County, Texas. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to Dr. Courtney Show. I'm Dr. Courtney Campbell.
Welcome, Dr. Evison, to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Courtney. It's great to be here, and I'm pretty passionate about this particular disease as well.
Excellent. But the bigger question is, are you passionate about Connecticut? Have you ever been to Connecticut?
I have visited Connecticut.
You never drove right through.
Here's the reason why, Courtney. I love to hike, and so we actually lived in New Hampshire for 4 years. Live free or die, I'm afraid that it's a fine contender for the state of Connecticut.
It really is, and there's nothing quite like growing up in New England. We've got everything out there. We've got the ticks, we've got the mosquitoes, we have unfinished basements. For everybody in New England, you know what an unfinished basement is. It's where the boogeyman lives. But seriously, we've got everything out there, and there are pets that are affected by a lot of these insects. When you were in New Hampshire, was Lyme disease something that you had either professional or, God forbid, personal experience with?
Both. So you can probably tell that I'm Canadian by origin, and moving from Central Canada. So I actually felt quite at home in New Hampshire because there was a lot of Quebecers there as well. So moving from Central Canada to the New England area really increased the list of bugs and creepy crawlies on my list of potential disease causers for practice, and New England had a plethora of them, and they came in the form of ticks. So I saw a lot of dogs when I was practicing at Tufts that came in with a positive test result for Borrelia burgdorferi, or the agent that causes Lyme disease. I diagnosed a lot of dogs with Lyme disease, and my own dog developed Lyme disease while we were living there as well. Yeah, so it's not a disease that I'm unfamiliar with from a personal perspective as well as a practice perspective.
Wow, this is so important. You mentioned the creepy crawlies, and, you know, there's so many out there. In fact, if you read the back of a bug spray bottle, there's actually an insect, they use a colloquial term, they're called no-see-ums, where you literally can't see them. And so there's everything out there, and we know that Lyme disease, you know, if you read the book Art of War by Sun Tzu, he says, know thy enemy, and we know that it is the tick that is the enemy here. Could you explain for everybody who's listening which tick that seems to be the major problem and why it is that, you know, sometimes there's a tick that's found, but the dog or the human doesn't get Lyme disease?
Yeah, no, it's a number of great points that you make there. And so to start from the beginning, I think all of us are familiar with the two words Lyme disease, right? From a human perspective, as well as from a canine or doggy dog perspective. To back it up a little bit more, Lyme disease is caused by a bacteria called Borrelia burgdorferi. And so that's the bacteria that actually causes Lyme disease. To make things a bit more complicated, though, I think most people are familiar with this, particularly those that live in the New England area where Lyme disease is a hot and hopping concern. It's caused in that area by what's called the deer or the black-legged tick, Ixodes scapularis. And that tick really likes to live in northeastern and upper Midwest USA, and as well as Canada. On the West Coast, it is carried, the bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi is carried by a tick called Ixodes pacificus. So that's what we see more often in the western part of the United States.
Excellent, excellent. And that's super important to know. There's regional differences here. There's no sort of general blanket generalizations we can make that are going to be applicable to every situation, regardless of where you are in the United States. It's really important to know that there are some regional differences. Now, I just want to dive right into the meat and potatoes here, because this is something that you and I have both experienced. You obviously experienced it on a completely different level, both professionally and personally. But that is the notion or the nature of having a dog who has been exposed to Lyme disease. They have tested positive for Lyme disease, but they are not sick. Could we explain to just people tuning in, how is that possible for a dog to be testing positive for this disease, but he's acting totally normal?
Yeah, and I apologize for not getting to that one last go around, Courtney, because I think it's a critical point, as you say. So what happens is that after a tick, I'll just use the East Coast example, an Ixodes scapularis tick is attached to a dog for anywhere between 24 to 48 hours. The bacteria, Borrelia, is transmitted into the dog from the tick biting or being attached. Now, after that point, three different things can happen in an individual dog, and it really is individual. Some dogs at that point will become, when tested, what we call seropositive.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to emphasize something you said that was so important. You mentioned 24 to 48 hours. That's how long the tick needs to be on the particular person or dog. And so for people listening out there who find a tick and it's not engorged and it maybe hasn't been there for 24 to 48 hours, should those people be worried?
I think there's always a concern when a tick is found because although we're talking about Lyme disease and the bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi today, that's not the only bug or pathogen or disease that can be carried in a tick. So I never ignore ticks that are attached to dogs because I'm not only thinking about Lyme disease. And I think your parents were really ahead of the game doing tick checks every night when you guys ran in from playing, because that's one of the most important things that tuned in pet owners can do is check for ticks and get them off before any disease can be transmitted, let alone Lyme disease, which requires between 24 to 48 hours.
Excellent. I'm so sorry. Please get back to the three things that can happen if a tick is attached to, let's just use a dog as an example, for 24 to 48 hours, it's engorged. What are the three possibilities that can happen?
So if it, as you mentioned, which was great, if ticks can be attached, then Borrelia may not be transmitted to the dog. So those dogs don't get infected. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that the dog does become infected. So the Borrelia bacteria passes from the tick into the dog, but the dog is able to eliminate the bacterium or just sort of able to live with it without it being causing a disease or clinical signs. And then, of course, the third possibility, which is what most of us recognize and are familiar with because we're tuned into our dogs not feeling well, which is dogs go on to develop clinical illness or what we call Lyme disease. Was that clear?
Yeah, that's super clear. You know, we have an expression here, everybody who listens to this podcast, and we call it tuned in, exactly what you said. And these are pet parents who are just super focused. They are understand their pets, and they definitely notice the subtle signs. And so we talked a little bit about the fact that Lyme can affect a pet and they're not showing any signs. But what about those pets who are showing signs? What are these pet parents? What should they be looking for if they are thinking, uh-oh, I think my pet may have Lyme disease?
Yep, and it's great. And these are exactly the people that we're all hoping to reach out to because they can help us make such a difference in their dog's health. So probably one thing I want to mention before we move on is we think, so us being the veterinary scientific community, think that of 100 dogs that actually have the Borrelia bacteria or have it transmitted from the tick, only about 10 of those dogs go on to develop clinical illness or Lyme disease.
Incredible.
And what Lyme, yeah, it's a really, I think it's again one of those things because it's easy to be scared, right? And we, there's a difference between being scared and having a raised awareness. And I don't want to scare people when I talk about clinical disease in dogs or in humans, but I do want them to think about it so that we can try and prevent it from happening. And I think knowing what is common and what's not common, like unicorns, not common, right, Courtney?
Right,
but
of course.
But things that are common are dogs that live in an area where there's a lot of ticks that become positive on tests but don't develop clinical illness. So big range between what is and isn't common, and I think something to really consider for tuned-in pet parents. Usually when a dog is infected with Borrelia burgdorferi and then is one of those 10 unlucky dogs that goes on to develop Lyme disease, so 10 out of 100, what we're seeing most classically is about 2 to 6 months after they've had that tick attach and they've been infected or had Borrelia transmitted to them, they're developing things like a mild fever and what we call a shifting limb lameness. So they might sort of pull up lame or off on one of their front legs, and a little later that day, one of their back legs seems to be a bit more painful or sore. And so that's what we see most often in these dogs. Sometimes their lymph nodes or their glands under their chin or in other parts of their body can also be a little bit firmer or more full than usual. That's really the most common sign that we see with clinical Lyme disease.
Certainly 2 to 6 months, we're looking out for these things. Obviously, the tuned in pet parents are always going to be focused and watching for these signs, but it's so good to get a timeline so that at around that range, like you said, if you hear footsteps and you hear the hooves, it's probably going to be a horse rather than a zebra or a unicorn. And I completely agree with you. If your dog is in an environment where particularly ticks are heavy and they have a shifting leg lameness and a fever, and it's about 2 to 6 months after you found a tick, well, then definitely there are strong considerations for the potential for Lyme disease. Now, I don't want to get too heavy in this, but this is just so interesting to me, and I love talking about this, and that is the technology in diagnosing Lyme disease, because for me, that is something that veterinarians, I definitely don't want to use the word struggle with, but that is definitely something that veterinarians debate and talk about in many, many circles. And I think it's important for pet parents or anybody listening to this to know that it's not that your vet struggles with the diagnosis. It's not that they don't know what to do, but that the fact that the technology in finding this particular organism can sometimes not detect it. What is, in your opinion, the best diagnostic modality to actually find out, does my pet even have Lyme disease? And there are definitely some pitfalls with each particular diagnostic modality.
No, it's really true. And, you know, I'm a pretty honest girl. And so I'm happy to say that I struggle with it.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, it's okay. And I think being honest about the challenges that come with making a clinical diagnosis of Lyme disease is important to be clear with pet parents about how hard that is. So the internal medicine community has sort of put together almost what I'd call an algorithm to try and make that diagnosis of clinical Lyme disease. And it goes a little something like this. Do you live in an area where there are Ixodes scapularis ticks? And do we know that Lyme disease has been diagnosed there? Or have you traveled to one of those areas? And if the answer is yes, then Lyme would be on my list, particularly in a dog that has consistent clinical signs. So that lameness that moves, fever, not feeling good. The reality with Ixodes scapularis ticks, or the tick that carries Lyme, is that it can sometimes be pretty hard to find. So even for dedicated folks that are looking and combing for those ticks, they can be pretty small, right? And the bacteria can be transmitted by the nymphs as well, which are even teeny tinier than the adults. So
if you have a black lab, you know, it's going to be so hard to see it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm not here to make anyone feel bad, because right at the beginning of the show, I was clear with you. My own dog, who is a lovely English setter, I diagnosed her with clinical Lyme disease in January. So she likely got infected or had a tick attached to her in the fall, and I didn't notice. And believe me, for those of you that are listening, I am a hardcore pet owner, right? So there's a lot of hair there, but that's my baby girl. So I was looking as carefully as I could for ticks. But even still, she obviously had a tick attached long enough that she developed clinical disease. And I didn't even think to test her to see if she was positive until clinical signs developed. So again, things to make that diagnosis is knowing your area, knowing the clinical signs that we think of with Lyme disease, tick exposure or not. And then also, the thing about Lyme disease is that it can really look a lot like other things than dogs get. So when I was living in the New Hampshire near Boston area, I actually had quite a few labs or retrievers that were referred to me that had orthopedic or muscle or bone disease because people thought they had Lyme disease. So again, just making sure that you aren't always thinking of Lyme disease just because that test has come up positive. So you really need to be considering everything along with that positive test result to make the diagnosis. And then the other thing about making the diagnosis of Lyme is after you've kind of ticked those things off your list as likely or not, is if you think that dog does have clinical Lyme disease, these dogs typically get better really quick with appropriate antibiotic therapy. And if they don't get better fast, and when I say fast, I mean between 24 and 48 hours, it's likely that it's something else that's causing those signs.
Oh, yeah. I've dedicated my life to veterinary surgery, and so certainly we have to keep that on the forefront of our minds all the time because I see a lot of limping dogs. And so if I'm seeing limping dogs, a lot of surgeons immediately go to, there's got to be a joint problem, a ligament problem, a soft tissue injury, that kind of thing. But you may be missing the fact that a dog is affected by a Lyme disease. Now, I really want to focus on prevention, but that can be a little bit controversial as well. So here's what we're going to do. If you don't mind staying with us, we're just going to pause for a brief break. And when we come back, I hope you don't mind, but we're going to be asking you some hard questions like, if my dog was positive, should we be vaccinating that dog or should we be treating that dog? So do you mind staying with us?
I would love it.
Okay, fantastic.
Hello, my name is Janine Dotson. I am the Director of Detroit Area Operations for Community Cats United. The mission of Community Cats United is to engage members worldwide who dedicate themselves to the caretaking of community cats and their efforts to promote community cat well-being. Our vision is to advance the status of community cats, uplift shelter medicine, encourage trap, neuter, vaccinate, return, support our members in all areas of cat rescue and advocacy, and to reduce the number of community cats and ease the plight of unowned cats everywhere. Listeners to this memo can help by visiting our website and donating. They can also help by purchasing coloring books that are made for adult colorers or upper elementary to young adult colorers, and those can be purchased from our website also. All monies go to provide trap neuter return services such as surgeries, medications, and colony caregiver supplies. Thank you for listening to this. Our website address is communitycatsunited.org. Thank you for any help that you can provide. Thank you also for being dedicated to animal welfare.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
We're back. We've been involved in just a riveting conversation about a particular condition that I'm very passionate about and that I'm very focused on and that has been a big part of my life and my professional career, and that is Lyme disease. We're joined by Dr. Evison. She's been absolutely fantastic in clarifying a lot of the particulars about Lyme disease. We both have spent time in New England. I was born and raised in Connecticut. She spent time in New Hampshire. So suffice to say, we have had our battles, you know, in diagnosing, treating, and communicating, and just educating people everywhere and pet parents about Lyme disease. And now we're focused on prevention. And that's where things get really interesting, because now we're starting to talk about vaccines. We're going to start talking about treatment for some people out there. And this happens almost on a daily basis. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, 6 out of every 10 dogs I would see, I was diagnosing them positive for Lyme disease. And I really want, Dr. Evison, if you don't mind, help us out and just talk about what it means to be exposed versus having the disease. And then a secondary question, if I find out that my dog has been exposed, i.e. testing positive, for those pet parents out there, should they be going home with antibiotics? Should they start treatment immediately?
Yeah, those are great questions, Courtney. And for some of them, I can feel very confident giving you a nice, quick answer. And for some of them, I can't, because I don't think we have those answers yet. And
you don't have all the answers, Dr. Everson. Why don't you have all the answers?
Yet again, I am a grand disappointment. I'm honest about it, because I think people need that kind of transparency, right? Because we all have to work together. And that's actually one of the focuses of my own research is working with involved pet parents to try and get some of these answers for this disease in particular. So again, just to sort of try and handle part one of that is a lot of dogs that live in areas where the Ixodes tick, so the tick that carries Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the agent of Lyme, are going to be positive on tests, because the test that we have for Lyme disease, it's an antibody test. And so any dog that has had a tick, the one I just mentioned, attached to them for long enough to have the bacteria transmitted is very likely going to develop antibodies to Borrelia burgdorferi, and they will show up positive on a test. And so in areas where there's a lot of Borrelia burgdorferi, a lot of Ixodes ticks, lots and lots of dogs will be positive on testing because they'll have antibodies from having the tick been attached. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be sick, and I'll get into the can of worms of treatment momentarily. Okay. But it does mean that they're going to be positive on that test result. And that is where veterinarians struggle. And it's not just the veterinarian down the street, the general practitioner that struggles. It's experts in the internal medicine veterinary community, because we just don't know. And there's not consensus on what to do with dogs that are positive or have an antibody response to Borrelia burgdorferi on testing. Some experts advocate treating those dogs with an antibiotic. Some experts don't. And some experts spend a lot of time talking to pet parents to make that decision together. So that kind of falls into those three categories on what to do with a dog that comes up antibody positive on testing. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I know that there are people out there who are on the Google and they're saying, well, you know, there's this solution that is basically like a godsend, and it's called a vaccine. I'll just give my dog that and they'll be protected, right? I mean, it's that simple.
I wish. I really, really wish. And you know, I say this a lot of the time. I think dogs aren't cars, and we can't expect that a single treatment or prevention is going to be effective across the board. So I think vaccination, particularly if you live in an area where Lyme is endemic, where there's a lot of Lyme, vaccination can be part of it. But what your parents did in the good old days, no offense, Courtney, I'm not quite sure how old you are. Tick checks.
I just had my 21st birthday. No, I'm kidding.
You sound awesome.
Thanks.
So tick checks is the other component of it. So if the ticks can't be attached for long enough, they will not transmit the bacteria. So that's one other important part of it. And then probably for me, because I'm not just thinking about Lyme disease, I'm thinking about a lot of other things that ticks can carry. Tick prevention in the form of an oral product, a collar, that's the other really critical piece of preventing your dog from getting Lyme disease, because it prevents your dog from having the tick attached to it long enough to transmit the bacteria. So it's really about those three things. And vaccination is helpful, and I think the consensus statement agrees that the vaccines work well, and they certainly work longer than they used to, and there's less side effects than there were historically. So vaccine products are good. It's just not the whole part of the picture, and it's certainly not 100%. We really need to be trying to prevent this from a number of fronts, vaccine being one of them, depending on your geographic area or where you live or what you're seeing or where you travel to.
Oh, that's excellent. And this is just one thing that I just have to get off my chest. And for just throughout my career, I have seen some very concerned pet parents out there. And I love that they are concerned. But one thing that I try to make sure I always correct the record is when I hear, hey, Dr. Campbell, I'm just not putting that poison on my dog's body. And I couldn't disagree more. A tick's body and metabolism and physiology is completely different than a mammal or your own dog. And the dangers of that Borrelia bacteria that we have been talking about this entire time, the dangers of Lyme disease in general, are so much more severe than any possible adverse event that, you know, your pet might experience from tick prevention. To be sure, there are adverse events that are certainly described with these particular products, but by far, they are much safer than the disease itself. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I think the technology has really advanced, right? So things are safer than they used to be, things work better, and they work longer than they used to. And again, I want to stress that even for people that really you cannot convince otherwise with respect to your poison comment earlier, there are other things that we can be doing, right? This isn't just about the vaccine. It's also about preventing that tick from attaching. It's being aware of where you are, and it's getting the tick off your dog before it can transmit the bacteria.
So well said. We could talk about this for semesters if we had the opportunity, but we don't have unlimited time. I don't want to muddy the waters too much, but this is something that is really popular and a very germane topic on the human side of the equation, and that is the idea of chronic Lyme. This is a term that you'll hear a lot in human medicine. On my side, in my experience, when I'm talking about particular quote-unquote chronic Lyme states, I want to emphasize, everybody listening, there is more to ticks than Lyme disease. I have seen in patients that I've been treated in Connecticut, ticks that have attached to dogs and have transmitted Lyme disease, another disease called Ehrlichia, another disease called Anaplasma. I've seen those three conditions all in the same dog. So in my opinion, it's so important to talk about, at least to address, what does it really mean when people use that term chronic Lyme, and what are these other conditions called Ehrlichia and Anaplasma? I would love to know your opinion about it. I know you're like, well, Courtney, what's the question? But really, Dr. Abbasid, take it away. What are you thinking when you hear that term chronic Lyme, when you hear about Ehrlichia and Anaplasma? Have you seen co-infections? Have you seen some dogs and patients that have had both of them at the same time?
Yes, I have. And it's great that you brought it up, because I think that kind of gets back to my point, right? Lyme disease, because it also occurs in human, and because of the swirl of controversy and conflicting opinion on terms like chronic Lyme disease, Lyme is a very emotionally charged topic for many people. And, you know, dogs are not people. Right? They're a different animal altogether. And we don't see the same things in dogs that people report in humans or human MDs. And they have their own consensus statements that they use for diagnosis. So chronic Lyme is not a term that we tend to use when we're talking about dogs. And, you know, that may fall into the things we don't know bucket. But right now, we're thinking about Lyme disease, as I described earlier, in dogs. And I think, you know, going back to your point, and one of the things that I really want to get across today is the topic here is Lyme disease, but it's really about ticks and preventing ticks from attaching to your dog for those of us, and I include myself, that are concerned pet parents, right? I don't want things like Ehrlichia or Anaplasma or Lyme disease or Rocky Mountain spotted fever or tularemia. I don't want my dog to get any of those things. And so keeping the ticks off my dog and off other people's dogs is really what's critical for preventing those things. In Canada, we're very aware of these ticks as they march across the border and more areas in Canada become endemic, just like the northeastern U.S. And so sending the message about tick prevention is huge for us there as well.
You know, when I see a riveting movie and at the end of it, you know, you're with whoever you're watching the movie with and you turn to them and you say, there's got to be a sequel. And you finish right at that moment where it's, you know, you mentioned Ehrlichia, you mentioned Anaplasma, you mentioned tularemia. There's got to be a sequel to our conversation here, because just talking to you is absolutely riveting. We've covered a lot of ground. We're going to tie it up here because you ended on a perfect note, which is about prevention. And everybody listening right now, of course, Lyme disease can seem scary. It's, as you mentioned, Dr. Abbasid, emotionally charged topic, but if we focus on prevention, I think we're going to make up a lot of ground and we're going to keep our pets a lot safer and ourselves a lot safer. So again, I just, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank you for joining the podcast, talking and imparting all of that knowledge you have with us. I hope that people listening learn something.
This is what I love to do, Courtney, is helping raise awareness for canine health. So it's really been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And thanks to all of you who tuned in to listen.
Oh, perfect. You promise that you'll come back?
I promise. Cross my heart.
There you go. Perfect. Talk to you soon, Dr. Evanson.
Thank you.
Well, wow. See that? I got her to promise to come back right at the end. That was excellent. Oh, you're still there. That's fantastic. Well, listen, why don't we summarize by just saying this, guys? Everybody who's listening, we know that there's millions of people out there who are listening and saying, listen, my dog was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and there's got to be parts of our conversation today that really resonate with you, that really help clarify this. And if your pets and your dog has never been diagnosed with Lyme, that's perfect. Or any of the other conditions we mentioned, or Ehrlichia anaplasma. But I really just want everybody out there to focus on prevention, making sure that you check your dog for ticks, making sure that you're using some tick prevention, and of course, having a very thorough discussion with your veterinarian about vaccination and about how important that is. And of course, we are not neglecting the 85 million of you out there, cats. You have a discussion with your veterinarian about Lyme disease in cats, because I haven't ever seen a clinical condition of it. So that's something, that's a whole nother topic and a whole nother discussion with Dr. Evanson as well, is, why aren't we seeing it? What's going on there? So there's so much that we can talk about and learn. Everybody, thanks for joining the podcast. And remember, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond. Thanks for joining us. We'll come back next time. We'll have more stellar guests.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.